Hi folks, good evening and warm welcome to this talk again. Nice to see some of you again. All right, this talk is about the Ceph file system experience in Umbrella release, which is the upcoming Ceph release this year. My name is Venki, I work for IBM. I'm the tech lead for the file systems team. Okay, you probably would have seen this 10,000 times, but I'll just include this for brevity. CephFS is a POSIX compliant file system, distributed file system, and the Ceph metadata server. And clients cooperatively maintain a set of distributed cache, including inodes and directories. So clients cache a lot. MDS hands out something called as caps to clients so that to allow them to delegate a certain part of the tree so that the clients don't have to get in touch with the metadata server frequently, thereby improving performance and throughput. And the file data, the clients actually talk directly to the data pool in Redos. This is just a high-level overview, nothing super interesting here. Okay. Before we go on into Umbrella and whatnot, this is a history of how Ceph and CephFS has come up. Started around 2006, Sage's project, PhD thesis, scalable high-performance distributed file system. Somewhere around 2011, InkTank was formed, and around 2014 is when Red Hat acquired InkTank. Most of the time, CephFS was marked as tech preview. It was not really production ready. A reason being there was not enough recovery tools and things like that. So if you happen to lose a file system, there was no way to rebuild it. So once we introduced that, we officially marked CephFS as stable in a single MDS case, somewhere around 2016-ish, Joule release. And a year down the line, we introduced multi-MDS as stable, multiple active MDSs, with dir frags, direct fragmentation, and also subdirect repinning. Somewhere on Nautilus 2019, NFS clusters management was introduced in the manager module, and the concept of CephFS subvolumes came into existence, and we'll talk about that on what we are doing. Pacific was a big release because we introduced lots of features, CephFS stop, snap schedule, multi-MDS scrubbing, limited window support with Ceph token, that's the client. With for Windows, CephFS Mirror Daemon, that's the asynchronous snapshot replication for the file system, and also FSCrypt, the kernel FSCrypt, I mean here. And we'll talk about what FSCrypt in the user space with upcoming releases. Somewhere around 2024, 2023-ish, the Squid release was also pretty decent in terms of features. We had the choirs and very improved MDS lock trimming, which was pretty nice because now you don't get the spurious MDS lagging behind trimming warning. And we also disabled the automatic balancer because it was misbehaving a lot. So that was more or less in Squid. I'll talk about Tentacle in the next slide. There's not enough space to fit here. And finally, we'll go into the Umbrella release and what's coming up. So Tentacle was released last year, so let me just do a pretty quick recap on what was introduced. Case-insensitive directory trees and subvolumes. This is something that my colleague Patrick worked on it last year. This is to support Samba use cases with CephFS, because CephFS is a POSIX compliant file system. File names are case-sensitive, while Samba works the other way around, case-sensitivity. So to improve performance and bring it on par with other storage systems, we had to do some kind of tinkering on the MDS and the client side, so introduce us case insensitive knowledge in the MDS and the client for Samba use cases. There was also a nice feature for file block differences between snapshots. So introduce a block diff RPC, where you can ask the Ceph metadata server, give it a file name and two snapshots, and it tells you what offset and length has changed between that file between two snapshots. And those snapshots need not be consecutive. It can be farther spaced, and the metadata server calculates all that has changed and gives you back. The block diff API, or the RPC, is being used by the CephFS Mirror Daemon, and now it's much more faster. And we also had some some requests from the community as part of CephaloCon 2024 2 years back regarding log replay times and, you know, how much there are a bunch of asynchronous jobs that run on the MDS. So there was no way to know how much time that would take, and there were some couple of features. So if you fail over a Ceph Metadata server and the failed over MDS now takes more than 30 seconds to replay its log, you get warnings and also an estimated log completion time. That was pretty neat. Okay, now let's talk about Umbrella. The main feature, I mean, these are the main features. I have a couple of them, slides for these. CephFS are volumetrics. Igor, my colleague here, has been actively working on this. We'll talk about this. Snapshot visibility, my colleague Bhaira has worked on it recently. Directory quarantining, we'll talk about this, but basically it's like quarantining a directory so that nobody had access to it and you need a special key to access that particular directory. User space encryption support. So I told kernel client it already had the encryption support. All that is imported back to the user space. The main users of this is NFS Ganesha and SMB. Again, more on the usability side, estimated completion time for disaster recovery tools. Whoever has used a DR tool with CephFS knows how painful it is, because it doesn't tell you anything, absolutely nothing. It just keeps on running. If you have petabytes of data in CephFS, it probably will run for days. So you have no idea whether it's making progress or doing anything. So now with this feature, Ceph status will actually show you the exact amount of time it will take for a disaster recovery to finish. And a couple of features here, the kernel client driver support is anticipated somewhere down the line in the future. The kernel driver obviously doesn't follow the user space timelines or the Ceph timeline, so that works a bit differently. Command audit logging, me and colleague Dairya spoke about this earlier today. That's also upcoming. Mirror daemon improvements. We'll talk about this. Major improvements in reporting metrics and a bit of the last low-hanging performance thing. MDS tracing framework. My colleague Igor has been working on this. And stabilization of a couple of APIs that's used by NFS and Samba. And also the long-standing QoS quality of service based on DM clock. That's going as a tech preview, by the way. So let's start talking about each of these features. So volumetrics. So currently, the kernel and the user space driver forward per client metrics to the MDS. So the client, when it's doing I/O, is trying to see how much a particular response from the MDS or the data pool is coming, and it aggregates this and sends it to the MDS. These are per client, right? These are not per share. So if you have mounted a particular sub-volume, like if NFS has mounted a particular share, which is actually a directory path, you don't get per sub-volume data, per sub-volume metrics. So that is changing now. Now, per share sub-volume will be reported for enhanced monitoring. The way this is being handled is, as I told, MDS has some concept of a cap, a capability for an inode. And we hook onto that. So whenever the MDS hands out a cap for an inode, it sends along the sub-volume ID under which it lives. So that's basically the inode number. And the client does everything to track all the metrics for this particular inode number, right? Anything, all IOs will start with a cap request. So essentially, the client knows which sub-volume the file or directory is under, and it starts tracking that particular those metrics, and the whole logic of forwarding it to the MDS still works. So now you get like per share metrics. This is a sample dump of how it will look like. So you see, so these are available with perf dumps. And if you're running other things like node exploiter daemons, these are plumbed into Prometheus. But perf dump shows you now the actual sub volume path and the counters for those paths. Okay, snapshot visibility. This has been mostly driven by IBM. The users for this is NFS primarily, where it was desired for the NFS clients to not be able to navigate snapshots. We all know snapshots can be created using every directory in CephFS has a special .snap directory. And you can create snapshots by just doing an mkdir under that special .snap. This .snap doesn't show up in listing, but it's traversable. So you can see it into it, but not list it. With snapshot visibility, you can switch the restrict access to the .snap directory. So once you enable this, which is actually a per client and a per sub-volume basis, you know the clients do not have access to .snap. With the auth cap, restricted auth cap, they can actually not snapshot the directory itself. But when you switch this on, they can't even traverse .snap. Okay, this is the feature I was talking about, which will go as a tech preview, directory quarantine. You know, it allows the operator to quarantine a SFFS subvolume, thereby restricting access. The use case for this is basically safeguarding data during security incidents, such as ransomware. Once a directory is marked as quarantine, new mounts, attempts on the subvolume are denied. Existing mount points that mount the subvolume path will be evicted. They are blocklisted, so they will have to remount, which will be disallowed. For existing mounts of the parent directories, so if some client has mounted the root or the file system and you mark a subdirectory as quarantined, all I/O operations on files within the quarantine directory will start to return errors. And the only way to have access to the quarantine directory is for the cluster operator to hand over a special auth key, which is like a keyring, to the user, which is also path restricted. And whoever has that keyring is the only one who can actually access it. So if you don't have that keyring, your directory is pretty much quarantined. This will be as a technical preview for the upcoming Umbrella release. User space encryption support. As I said, the kernel driver has support for encrypted subvolumes from 6.6. The entry names are encrypted using the FSCrypt library. File data is encrypted with per file keys stored in inode metadata. This is compatible with all the user space tools. So the FSCrypt tools, they work with EXT and the X4 file system. They transparently work with SFFS too. It's essentially a port of the kernel client's implementation of FSCrypt, and the same primitives and the protocols are in use and cross-compatible with the kernel. So FSCrypt-enabled clients has to present a key to lock and unlock a directory. If you don't have the key, you can't lock it. FSCrypt unaware clients will see the encrypted versions of the file. They were making no sense. My colleague Chris has done an extensive talk on it, on this, a couple of years back in Cephalocon. I'll link that at the end of this of the presentation. That will give you an extremely detailed view of how it's implemented. Okay, some UI improvements. Disaster recovery etc. So, as I said, offline disaster recovery tools offer no or limited progress. Lack of estimated time completion for offline tools such as the data scan and the journal tool. If you have ever run it, you will know the pain. But with Umbrella, the progress and etc. estimated time of completion is reported via substatus. So here's a sample one. I have omitted the other health okay things. So this is like a SFFS data scan extends subtask, or maybe let's call it a step that's being run on distributed on the file system. Basically, scan extends is going to scan the data pool. Going to each object in the data pool and it's trying to recover the metadata. And with this, you'd know how much time it's going to take. I hope you never have to run this, but if you do, you actually get a lot of information on how much time it takes. So in this case, it takes 27 minutes, whatever. Command audit logging. This was the presentation me and my colleague Dhairya did earlier in the day. Lack of historical records for, was making things like, complications in cases. We don't know what exactly happened. So with the implementation of the command audit logging system, you'll get a structured chronological order of what commands were run on the file system. Management commands, when was MaxMDS changed? When was a particular config was switched on? Every single history is there for you to query and for us to be able to see what accurately was done. Improved mirror daemon. Federico was talking about this in the morning. Thank you. And this is going in the Umbrella release. The Tentacle release significantly improved the snapshot synchronization performance by using PlugDiff. There have been some performance deficiencies for corner cases that has been addressed. That will be addressed with the Umbrella release, and those will probably be backported to the Tentacle release. But the main focus here is for metrics and feedback. How much time is going to take for snapshots to get asynchronously replicated to a different cluster? So that was something that was entirely missing, and it has been actively worked on. Integration with dashboard is also another thing that will happen. Tracing framework. The design implements the hierarchical tracing framework. So, Open Telemetry is one of the popular tracing, tracing frameworks that that is widely used. And the MDS tracing framework implementation of the framework will actually, the goal is to integrate with OTel. However, for Umbrella release, we are not totally integrating with Open Telemetry, but laying down the foundations to do it in the future. So the way it will work is each of those MDS, a client request will be tracked inside the MDS and each of those metrics will be exported via an MDS command. So this is how it will look like. This particular JSON or the metadata is OTel compatible. So when in the future we do an Open Telemetry integration, all of this will be nicely viewable in the Yager UI or the Open Telemetry UI. So in this case, if you see real quick, there's a unlink from the client that is being handled by the MDS. And these are the various stages of the request inside the MDS. And you can see the MDS is now tracking at a very granular level how much each of those steps are taking. And some of these stages are asynchronous, so even that is taken care of. Like the journal wait is the MDS submitting, journaling a record and waiting, not really waiting for it, but waiting for a callback for the journal IO to finish, and the telemetry tracing, MDS tracing takes care of all of it. Okay, libsff in this. Asynchronous and zero copy APIs that was there in the CephFS user space client, but they were not marked stable. Main users of this is again NFS Ganesha and SMB. The primary reason they were not being used was because of the lack of testing. So with now with Umbrella release, at least. Workload testing has been started to do with Ganesha client, so we test Fuse, which is the user space client, the kernel client, and now the Ganesha client. So all of the workloads will run with all of three. And NFS and Samba, I believe, Samba 2 has integration of to use the asynchronous IO interfaces with libsffs, and those probably will also be called as stable. NFS has integration, but they have switched it off. Once we mark it as stable is when NFS will mark it as usable. Okay, last but not the least, I guess, long-standing request, Ceph MDS quality of service. This is a feature that has been contributed by Line Corporation. They spoke about this in CephLocon 2023 in Amsterdam, I believe. The video is out there. They have been using it for long, and they did submit a pull request. However, there was, couldn't make to review the pull request, but now we have taken efforts to do that, added tests, added documentation, which was actually lacking in the pull request. However, it will be a technological preview, tech preview again, so we have to enable it. It will be disabled by default, and once we are happy with our tests and documentation, mostly tests, is when we could make it open for use. All right, here are some links for some of the things I spoke about, the tracing changes, the QoS changes, documentation into how to extract subvolumetrics and a detailed user space FS script talk from Cephalocon a couple of years back. Yeah, I'll be happy to take questions. Yeah.
Please let me know if this is not the right place to ask this question, but let's say I know how to administer CephFS, and I want to learn how to build or administer something that's designed for AI workloads like Lustre cluster. I'd like to know, like, how hackable is CephFS? How tunable is it to get it closer to something that can service a GPU cluster for high performance
Okay, so your question is basically, how do I tune a Ceph file system to work well with, say, an AI workload? Okay, so what typically would be the AI workload you're looking at?
Let's say you have like a cluster with 16 GPUs, and you want to be able to reach like sub-MS latencies and very high throughput. And resiliency isn't really a concern. I know with the CephFS cluster that we have right now in production with 3x replication does not reach that because of all the overhead of replication and the MDS overhead and everything. But I've heard of certain numbers from other people who do Lustre, and I was wondering if I can get build a custom CephFS with certain tunings and tweaks just to get it closer to them.
Okay, I don't have an answer right now, frankly. But if you have specific cases, we can talk about it. But supporting some kind of a Lustre base and achieving Lustre kind of throughput, because Lustre is pretty much everything is hardware based and it requires special things. This is not that. CephFS is not that. So that requires a special kind of. You might want some special configurations, which we can talk about, but I don't have anything on top of my head to give you an answer. But AI workloads are nasty. I mean, I recently saw an AI workload that was trying to list a directory with 1 million files or 10 million files.
Yeah.
That is not going to scale with any file system, leave CephFS, right? Not even Lustre, I think. Maybe not even Lustre.
yeah, I mean, it's just management. They're bugging us for all these new AI workloads, and our customers, will tell you, oh, so we have this from this provider, and can you provide this kind of performance? It's just like. I'm trying to understand if it is like a technological limitation, or is it something else? Like, do I need to think about hardware or different kind of
Well, it's not a technological limitation, but at least for sometimes the applications have to be written sensibly, right? Listing 10 million files on a directory is not going to lead to nice things. So sometimes you have to just write the application in a more sensible way. And I have seen in the past that folks try to run an application that was previously working well with a local file system and expect to work the same way in a distributed file system. That might not be an achievable target. I mean, you see POSIX and you see mount and everything is fine, but behind the scenes, things are very different. There are things that local file systems can do because it's local, and distributed file systems cannot.
I'm going to come across as someone who's kind of a layman and naive, but I've heard a coin word called GPU direct link. It's something that basically bypasses the CPU to read from the distributed storage engine directly directly to GPUs without bothering the CPU. Is this something you've heard of?
No. RDMA?
Like what games do?
Yeah, like RDMA, exactly. Yeah,
like RDMA, but not really RDMA, right? I mean. Right.
So yes, do we have any more questions for the speaker right now?
Yep.
Just to relate one to this one, I'm guessing Surf is hardly Ethernet, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, yes. Your question is Surf is pretty much hardening to the Ethernet? Yeah, pretty much. Any more?
Thank you, then.
Yeah, thank you.